very loudly. I won't have to yell today. Welcome to the session. My name is Chris Gideon. I'm a solution architect with Microsoft. And for the last year or so, I've been focusing on SharePoint 2013 social. So this is the point where I do a little, that is real loud. This is the point where I do a little expectation setting. I realized there was a lot of announcements at the keynote this week, and we talked a lot about Yammer integration, some of the things that are coming and changing in terms of social, and how you get Yammer with O365, and all that sort of thing. But today, what I'm really going to focus the majority of this on is deploying 2013 social on-premise. I'm going to try and talk to some of the points where they're going to, you know, affect you both ways, but for the most point, or for the most part, that's the way I'm going to direct it. In some ways, that's going to make it complicated, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions that might come up in terms of, you know, what else should be done. But the thing I'm anticipating the most being difficult about this session is the fact that they tell me that a third of you are developers, a third of you are business decision makers, and a third of you are an IT pro. I'll tell you right now, it's going to be really difficult to satisfy all three audiences, as different as they are. But I'll try and do a little bit of each of that. In terms of the agenda, we're going to start off by answering one of the big questions that I don't know has been answered yet this week, and that is, what is social? And it's also one of the first points about this session, is that I wish the session would have been titled Deploying Social Computing in the Enterprise, as opposed to deploying social, because it has so many permutations and meanings. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to quickly, since you guys have probably been demoed to death on the SharePoint 2013 social features, we're going to go through those again in kind of slide form. And then we're going to get into some of the planning considerations that you might want to look at when doing an on-premise deployment. Then we're actually going to, via screenshot, because I've been warned that I might not be able to get my demo environment, I've took the liberty of staying up all night and doing screenshots of each phase of the deployment, just in case. So we'll walk through and talk through those to make sure you can actually see what those dialogues look like and the things that you'll have to do to get that to work. So with that said, what is social? Well, should be, what is social computing, right? Because that's specifically what we try to address with this type of technology at Microsoft, because we're a technology manufacturer, right? Well, the interesting thing is I've been a part of a team recently that's been working with customers, really interviewing them, trying to get a handle on what it is that they expect. What are they looking for when they come to us and say, we want social computing? And the thing that's interesting is when we took a lot of those surveys, a lot of their words, and we put them into kind of a tag cloud format, you can see that we got a whole series of different words with different types of things, right? We had some folks say, social computing to us is all about community. It's about building up a community, solving problems, you know, via this community. Other folks said, social is just an aspect of collaboration. It's been there all along. It's just another technology set or capability. We had others that said, social is all about getting in touch with our employees, really trying to find a way to build up that connection between our employees and find new ways to connect them. You know, information, media, knowledge, people, sharing. You can see that just about everyone we talked to had a different idea of what they were expecting out of it. And that kind of brings me to my first thought here, and that is, start with a vision when you go to deploy social in your enterprise. Take the time to figure out exactly what you would like to accomplish with it. You know, what business processes are you attempting to add social capabilities to really figure out how you're going to get the most value? Because it's when you start to build that vision for where you want to take social and what things you want to bring that capability to, that you start driving towards a strategy and figuring exactly how you're going to, you know, get that out to the business. Because when you're delivering this type of infrastructure and you're spending this type of time getting things put out there, the business is likely going to come back to you and say, we want you at the end to have some sort of analytics that you agree upon up front to tell us that we got our money's worth, right? That there was a return on investment. OK, because that's one of the biggest things that the team I'm on heard is, we're not 100% sure about this social thing. We're going to go ahead and deploy it anyway. We're going to figure out if somebody's going to come back and use it later. Well, turns out that the people that take that kind of if you build it, they will come approach don't necessarily look back in a year or so and find that they were very pleased with what they got deployed, because it didn't really map or address to something they were trying to solve with that capability. The other big point is there's a fine line between deploying social computing and trying to socialize a business process and governance. If you lean too far to the governance side, you might end up stifling the network, stifling that type of social computing in your enterprise before it ever gets started. And typically, in a lot of the engagements I've talked to people on, it starts with all the objections first. It's going to take my employees' time away. They're not going to get anything done. I don't want to know when someone's gone out to the hallway. I'm not interested in finding out that someone's in Starbucks. They really start to think about it in terms of consumer social, right? That experience that they had with Twitter. And really what we're talking about more with enterprise social is really trying to find a way to give the user more information in the places that they need it. More information and more tools to actually make their job easier. It's really more about being productive. So, what did we start giving you in SharePoint 2010? What did we really have to offer in terms of a social experience? Well, as you can see, we had the user profile, which we've had for a while, but it got greatly upgraded. We had the ability to quickly give you a snapshot and kind of the office card to give you contact information, presence information, a place to organize your content, see where someone was in the enterprise. You know, where do they sit? Is this the right person to contact? And in a lot of cases, the customers I talked to said that this made an outstanding phone directory. It was a great way beyond the Exchange global address list to find people quickly and determine if it was the right person. We also gave you the notion of tags and notes and a note board where you could go and post notes. And we brought you colleagues and we brought you the notion of interests, and we really started building a framework towards it. But a lot of you decided that that wasn't enough, and clearly it wasn't. So as we moved into 2013, there were a lot of investments made to try and take some of these concepts like expertise discovery, social search, trying to make sure that we can tag and follow tags, really, you know, open up that form of communication with the customer throughout the enterprise. Which takes us to what we decided to do in terms of investments. And I know a lot of the thunder's been stolen for this week, so I apologize if you're in the social track, and this is about the third or fourth time you've seen what we did in 2013. So apologies up front. But you can see that this is the primary landing page for the social experience. This is a personal site. And you'll notice that Ann Wallace, and I don't know how many of you follow Microsoft demos, but over the years, Ann has changed quite a bit. She's gone backwards in time. She must have found the fountain of youth or something, because I noticed that she's 20 years younger in the latest demos. And I also noticed that she's gone up in position, right? So we've started to see some sort of hostile takeover occurring in the Contoso company. But either way, you can see here that, you know, Anne has her page. She gets a list of everyone she's currently following and looking at the activities that we have. So she's got that constant stream that's important to her, that constant news feed of what she needs to pay attention to. And you can see that in this particular case, a lot of it is focused around her job. So it's not necessarily just something that's occurring within the company. It's more about a presentation that got created and the work that's going into making sure that that presentation went off well, that her event was successful, and the people that are involved are in there praising it, and they're doing things like liking it. And they're also given the ability to follow different people that were involved right there, which is one of the big themes in SharePoint 2013 social, is the ability to follow things. Not just following people in the notion we had in 2010, like having colleagues that we could go and track and see what they were doing, but also really following content, following documents. And kind of like Jeff said in his keynote, the ability to really go in and narrow down all that information that's being built out there in that giant enterprise content farm, right? Scattered all over your enterprise, lots and lots and lots of things for an information worker to look at. And so she's got the ability to start narrowing that down by following specific people, the ones that are really core to her job. She can follow documents to get updates on the ones that are the most important to her. She's following sites, and she also has the ability to follow tags and keep track of the tags that are trending that are directly related to her. So again, it's all about getting a feed or a stream of information on the things that are most important to Anne. And in addition to that, you can see through Anne's page, we changed the look and feel of what it means to actually visit someone's profile. So in this particular case, this is Anne from a different perspective, right? This is what people see when they go to look at her. They instantly get her contact information on the right. They can see the activities that she's been engaged in. They have the interests that she's declared. She also has a brief description. So a very concise directory of what she has available. Oh, and of course, there's Garth Ford up in the upper right corner. So he has to be in every demo at some point. Then we introduced the notion of SkyDrive Pro, which again, I know is something that you've also heard about, but I promise this will all move towards deploying this technology. And with SkyDrive Pro, we have the ability to have that single document library up in their personal site, their My Site. That's that one location where they can go and look and share those documents, see who they're sharing it with, store it all in one place. Because as someone that came from the support side, one of the main questions I got on a regular basis was, now, is this a doc that I should put in my public folder, or should I put this in my private folder? And then I had others that came back and basically said things like, well, private documents or personal documents has a completely different meaning in our country. And that means the employee owns it and not the business. So we want to get rid of that entirely. So they spent a lot of time trying to like stamp out features like that to make sure they were compliant with local laws and regulations. So with this, we really have the ability to trim it out and get one view of all the documents she has, really take some of that distraction away and put the focus there. And in addition to that, as a replacement, as you've also heard, for what used to be SharePoint workspaces, is the option to take libraries offline. So we have the ability to take everything that she puts up in her SkyDrive Pro, her document library, we can take all that offline, we can make changes, we can share it, we can also make sure that she can synchronize the information and quickly find out who she's shared it with as well, and also take advantage of the COBOL protocol, which is the front-end protocol to make sure that we only send the differences of a document up to the server. And then once it gets to the server, SharePoint uses shredded storage, which I'm sure some of you have heard about, that actually sends back just the differences to the server. So we have a completely optimized stream, avoiding redundancy in the way that we store the files. And this takes advantage of it and also keeps her in a familiar view inside of Windows Explorer. In addition to that, you saw that we also have the ability within the My Site to have a My Tasks, a personal timeline, a location where all the things that are going on within Exchange, within Project Server, within all the different SharePoint sites, rolled up and made available upfront to the individuals so they can see in one location what they're on the hook for, right? Everything that they've got to produce. And then you take this, a lot of the notion of this news feed that we have in terms of the My Site, and you bring that out to team sites by default through a feature. So it gets enabled through provisioning, and you have the ability to have a roll-up of all the document information that's occurring on those sites, go up and become a part of that overall feed, that overall list of the things that you're involved in. So yet again, another way to really sort through the type of information that's most important to you. It's again not about creating lots and lots of noise. It's more about reducing noise and getting to the information faster. And then one of the other things and again, we'll start getting into some of the planning considerations, is about communities. And there's a whole session going on about building rich communities tomorrow. And it's all about utilizing a new custom site definition that we have that is the community site. And it provides the ability to really build a community out with a full discussion, with capabilities to actually see how many members you have, find out how many discussions you have, find out how many replies you have on specific topics, find out who's contributing, and really drive that contributions through things like gamification, awarding badges for activity, promoting activity, through assigning badges, really trying to show people that, to get them to contribute in a constructive way, calling out attention to the types of things that you really want to see them doing. And for us at Microsoft, I've been involved in a program where we're trying to roll some of these types of communities out for some of our technical discussions. So we rolled out one for our internal SharePoint technical discussion. And one of the things that we're doing with that is trying to decrease the number of times that people send the same email asking exactly the same question over and over again. We're really trying to find a way to once and for all answer it, surface it, promote that discussion item so that when the next person comes in, the time it takes them to get that information is much shorter. It's kind of in their face as a featured discussion, and they can quickly get to it without having to spend the time to go send that email, wait for a certain amount of time, see if it comes back. It's all searchable, and it's all been tagged and replied to. In addition to that, we can control the members. We can also control the moderation of these communities, report abusive behavior, and really take action on it and report some of the aspects of this community up. So it's a great way to kind of pull yourself out of those email-type distribution lists and begin the process of thinking about reusing that information. And with that, let's talk about some of the planning, because I'm sure over the course of the next few days, you're going to get more and more sessions that are going to go much deeper into those futures than I am here. But I wanted to make sure that we were speaking somewhat the same language before we start talking about planning for those features. The first big piece that you have to take into consideration when you start planning out a social agenda with SharePoint 2013 is identity. And what I mean by identity is not just how does a user log in? It's not necessarily about how a site is secured or how a site is, authenticated. It's really about what is that person? Right? Who is that person? Who's their digital persona? What components make them up in the enterprise, right? Because, for instance, I had one customer come up to me when I was on site, and he said, there's a problem. You're going to have to go fix this because for whatever reason, we can't get SharePoint to recognize that I'm a vice president. It still says I'm a team manager. We'll take a look at that right away, sir. Go take a look at it, and it turns out that he hasn't updated his title in the system that they've chosen to pull from. So that's his title from 4 or 5 years ago. So after I congratulated him for rapidly ascending from team manager to vice president in such a short period of time, I also let him know that we needed to have a discussion about where we pulled their identity from. We wanted to make sure that if Active Directory is the source you're going to pull from, we want to make sure that it is up to date and fresh. In which case, they explained to me, well, we don't ever update the information there. So we had to have a new type of discussion about, what are the attributes that are going to be important to you? What are the profile properties that you actually want to bring into SharePoint and enrich and make discoverable? So it's really about where is your authoritative source for identity in your enterprise? Are you pulling from it? Are you pushing to the system that you're going to use to bring that data into SharePoint? How fresh is it? And how will you import the data? And before I go to the next slide, how many folks in here are extremely pleased with the performance of profile import in SharePoint 2010? No one. I'm shocked. One of the things that you're going to find, if you haven't heard already, is now you have options. So no longer do you need to just rely on utilizing Forefront Identity Manager sitting under the covers in SharePoint. You also have some other options to do a feature called AD import, which we're going to talk about in a bit. And then you also now have some additional options that are going to be presented at a session later this week, where you can actually, if you already have an enterprise identity management system, you can actually connect to it directly and pull that information back into SharePoint. So no more having that extra hop of having maybe an enterprise identity management system, shove something into Active Directory, pull it from Active Directory into SharePoint, and wait for that long cycle to complete. Now, if you have that identity management system set up, we can actually pull directly from it and put it into SharePoint. But we knew there were some things that people really enjoyed, and we actually, you know, the product group did do it for a reason. They did put together a they did put Forefront Identity Manager into SharePoint for a very good reason. So they set out to try and figure out how to make it faster. And if you look at some of the goals that they set, they wanted to take an environment that had 200,000 users and 600,000 groups, and they wanted to take that from 2 weeks down to 60 hours. And I'm happy to say, at least in a couple of the customers I've talked to, they were able to do that. And you can see that in one case of 300,000 users, they were actually able to bring it down to 7 hours for full import. So after really a monumental effort delivered in stages across 2010, we get to the point where we have a much faster, quicker experience with Forefront Identity Manager in SharePoint 2010. And in SharePoint 2013, all those investments have been continued, and it continues to be more and more efficient. The team has done a great job of looking at everything all the way down to how many times a stored procedure gets called in a database. It was a very, very thorough analysis. And I have customers today that are actually running it that have gone from somewhere for 12, 13 hours for an incremental import from Active Directory down to 2 hours and 45 minutes. So significant increase in performance. Well worth taking the time to look at. You can see that in terms of the details, I've tried to leave a lot of those on the slides for you to come back and look at later, but overall, we grab things from BDC in batches rather than one at a time. So if you do pull that information to augment your existing profiles from Active Directory with something from Business Connectivity Services, then it does it a lot faster. We removed a series of provisioning steps that weren't necessary. We cleaned up a lot of the unused historical data that was in there. And we also moved a series of objects that really weren't necessary to do a profile sync. So a lot of the overhead has been removed, and it's really made it significantly faster. But let's say that you want to go back to the days of SharePoint 2007 and have that sync be very simple to set up with a very limited number of permissions and occur in an extremely quick time frame. For that, I give you Active Directory import. It's essentially built on the dir sync control, and it pulls information in at an incredibly fast rate. I have seen huge numbers, hundreds of thousands, pulled in within just a couple hours. It's processed quickly. The way it's set up is you set it up to a single Active Directory forest, but for every domain in the forest, you have more than one connection, or you set up one connection per domain. You select which OUs you'd like to import from, and you do that using an LDAP filter that you will find strikingly familiar to the 2007 experience. And you import users and group objects. And with that, you can still do the full or incremental import. And if you so choose, you can actually switch back and forth between the FIM version and the AD import. So either way, it gives you a very, very fast option. With that, though, since identity is so important in deploying social, you have to ask yourself, are some of the limitations that come with AD import going to work for our enterprise? So let's talk about what a few of those are. We do not process links across forests, so you really are tied to a single forest when we do that connection with AD import. We also don't have the ability to map multiple values to a single value. So one of the things that you're doing that way in FIM today, where you've got multiple things assigned, we can't do that when we're using AD import. Mapping to system SharePoint properties, you know, all those that begin with SPS dash, isn't supported as well. So it's going to be a set of properties that are a very simple set of properties that you're going to map. And then also, we don't support using ADM ports pull from BDC. So if I were to ask again and say, how many are going to say, I think I can get enough profile information out of ADM port and I don't want to utilize FIM, how many of you would go that way? Just show of hands, just out of curiosity. So still a good chunk of the room. So with that said, let's start talking about, so we've talked about identity, we've talked about how important it is to really pull together the types of information you need to have a rich profile experience and make sure that when we go to search for people, when we go to link people together and find out how they're connected, we have it. Well, let's take a look at how that social feature architecture works. And there's going to be a session on Thursday that goes into considerably more depth. But in a nutshell, we basically divide things up into a series of activities, which are either user-generated, like the microblogging activities, like when a user goes and likes a post, when they actually make a post, when they reply to one, or when they do a mention. Those types of activities are user-based. We also have activities that are system-based that generate events like, say, a birthday. And those types of activities are all fed through the profile database in some cases, or will be pulled from the personal or MySite content databases as well. So both of those are types of activity generators that we have. And then that information is reported off on by a series of feeds. So if you think about what's generating the activity is really either the user or the system. And then over on the feed side, we have a series of the standard news feed that you saw for the personal site right off on the main page. You had the mentions capability where we can actually go mention different individuals. You have all their likes, all the other activities that are being generated, and the types of feeds and activities that are kind of rolling up to the surface from sites. And all that information is being not just stored inside of content databases, but it's also stored inside of a distributed cache. And that distributed cache gives us the ability through web parts to really pull that information up quickly so that the experience is a lot more real time. And we're going to talk about how distributed cache is actually broken out a bit. Within the distributed cache, we really have a feeds cache where we're actually capturing all that activity information and then pulling that information out when we go to use the web parts. And then we also have a last modified time portion of the cache where we're really keeping track of when something was written. So as a result of that, things are written to the content database for the My Sites, and they're also written to the sites where we have the news feed enabled. And then that information is also in the feed cache in some cases as well. And that all basically gives us the ability to really decouple the type of work that we did in 2010 where we had all of the social tagging information really stored inside that social DB. But let's talk a little bit more about distributed cache and some of the things that you need to consider when you actually go to deploy this. So we actually have two modes for distributed cache. We've got dedicated and we have co-located mode. The dedicated mode, I believe, is going to be more of the recommendation, and that's really pulling the distributed cache off of the servers and putting it onto dedicated servers for distributed cache. And that lowers the memory requirements on the front ends that are actually serving requests and allows us to put the focus there. Now, that feed cache and that last modified time cache, I mentioned, are going to have the recent conversations and they're going to have the activities of all the different entities that are collected in that social, right, or from that social data. And again, we're going to maintain all the times, like the last time it was modified, all those dates. We'll maintain that cache as well. Now, when you first go to deploy the distributed cache, you might be tempted to go and deploy it manually, but the recommendation is going to be to use the prerequisite installer to actually put it down on SharePoint. Because when we lay it down, we're actually doing a little bit of additional work to make certain that the types of, or that the way it's actually deployed and utilized by SharePoint is taken advantage of. Now, when it first starts up, it immediately goes out and grabs about 400 meg in terms of memory. So you can see automatically that's one of the reasons why we want to start thinking about dedicated, is it's a pretty good chunk of memory. In addition to that, it also tries to grow itself to where it's about 10% of physical memory, so it can put more and more in cache. And as that memory starts to get committed, we can actually go in and set or modify it, but it doesn't recalculate by itself. So if I change the server menu or server memory and I'm trying to grow it up to a higher number, I have to actually go back in and run a series of commandlets to go and modify that back down. So I can do the set cache host config commandlet, and then I can also, that way I can decrease it. Now we have some guidance that we really don't want you to go above 16 gig. And you might say, well, what if I just want to really have a huge amount of memory pointed at this thing and have an array of very large servers? What would I do with that? And so in that particular case, the reason we really don't want you to go that high on memory is because the amount of time it takes to repopulate the cache gets higher and higher. It takes longer and longer. So right around the 16 gig mark, you're getting some of the better performance. The other thing that we want to advise you about when you're thinking about deployment and getting this set up is that you don't want to just stop it arbitrarily because it is a volatile cache. And a couple of the items that are truly volatile that are only stored in cache is the activities that occur on following a document or following a site. So when I go and I say I want to follow a site in SharePoint, there is a record written to a list that I am following the site. And if I want to follow a document, there's also a record written for that. There's a list item created. However, the activity that occurs around both those types of items are only persisted in cache. So just periodically shutting off cache is going to create a situation where you know that you're following a site, you know you're following a document, but you actually don't have any of the activity on that doc being reported back until the cache gets repopulated. So when you do go to stop it and reconfigure it, you want to make sure that you're updating the server and you're only focusing on one cache box at a time during that repopulation phase. So, as I already pointed out, co-located mode is not necessarily the best idea, but if you find that you're moving it out and you're installing the distributed cache service onto a specific box, and on that box, you want to go ahead and run additional services as well, there's a couple that we wouldn't recommend you put there. We wouldn't recommend that the distributed cache box be the same as your SQL server. I think that kind of goes without saying that that's probably a bad mix. We also wouldn't want to see search running on one of those boxes because they'd be competing for memory, competing for resources and I/O. Excel services and project server services as well. So there's a few services that you want to make sure are not running on the boxes that you're dedicating for that. Now, as I mentioned, since the distributed cache doesn't automatically recalculate how much memory it's actually using, you want to make sure that if you virtualize the environment, that on those boxes where you're doing the distributed cache service, that you don't run with dynamic memory. Because what happens is the system starts to see that the amount of physical memory available to it has decreased, and it starts to trim out of the distributed cache. It starts taking items out. So you end up in really strange behavior, and unfortunately I can say that during the course of going through some of this material in the Ignite training, I've seen some of that those activities actually poof, vanish right in front of me. So definitely do not run with dynamic memory, and they've actually put a support statement out on TechNet saying that as well. If you choose to not deploy the distributed cache service when you're going through the prerequisites installer, you can actually use the skip register as distributed cache host PowerShell command to make sure that it doesn't just get automatically added to the box. And that's really the way that you're going to split out that distributed cache to a different box entirely. So as I mentioned already, what happens when you stop it? The tags and documents are only saved to the feed cache. Right, so we're not going to see those if the cache is stopped because we'd have to pull those directly from the list and we won't have access to that activity. So how often will these run if, for instance, say, one of the boxes running distributed cache goes away? Well, the last modified time cache for recent conversations and activities to begin that feed repopulation occurs about every 5 minutes. And in some cases, that can take a pretty good amount of time. Now, there are ways to go in and clear or purge that cache and force it. We've got the update sp-repopulate microblog LMT cache. We have the update sp-repopulate microblog feed cache. And you have to run them in a specific order. So if you're in the process of trying to actually trim through that, you'll have to run the first one and then the second one to actually begin that process. And when you go to do a shutdown, we actually recommend that you go through a graceful shutdown of the service by actually going through the process of stopping it and removing it if you're going to pull it from a specific box. So how does all this look in terms of if we kind of step back up out of the distributed cache again and we look at how this sits inside of a personal site? How do these features actually get utilized? Well, first off, you're going to notice that there's a personal site there. And that's because the personal site or the My Site is the storage mechanism for the SharePoint 2013 features. Within that site, we have two lists. We have a microfeed list and we have a social list. Within that microfeed list, we have a private view for the things that are security trimmed specifically for those, and we have a public view, which are the things that are going to be projected and made available for others to see. We also have a social list, and that social list is where we actually keep track of things like the sites that we're following, the documents that we're following, and some of the other responses from microfeeds. In addition, you can also see that the My Documents portion, the SkyDrive Pro, is actually a part of the personal site as well. You'll also notice that we still do have the profile database, and we have the social database. We have the profile database because we continue to use that for things like tracking which colleagues we have, also tracking, it's the storage location for things like the image for a My Site, and it's also the storage location for a series of other types of property information as well. And then we have the social DB there containing some of the tagging information that we had from the past, specifically for when people follow or for following people in tags as it was in 2010. And again, one important thing to note here is that in addition to having these lists, we're also writing them to that distributed cache that I rattled on about for several minutes, right? So it's a big portion of how we're actually going to read this information from the web parts that actually make up that social feature. Site feeds. We mentioned before that inside of a team site, we can now go and add a news feed. We can add a site feed specifically for that. Now, and why do I have this in planning and deployment? Because there's some considerations for that when you're designing your topology. One is that you'll note, if you remember, that one of the things that Jeff did during his demo during the keynote is he actually went, instead of saying share with everyone, he clicked the dropdown, and there were a series of sites that corresponded to the places where he said that you could have a more private conversation, right? Because it narrows the scope of that particular feature to a site and the people that have permission to that site. Because by default, whenever I go to blog something through the share with everyone, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's sharing it with everyone. It's public, it's open, it's not restricted. Whereas if I want to share with a specific group of people, I use that group conversation notion that ties in with the site feed infrastructure and does that. Well, we have the option, and you might have seen it in that dialogue, that when you click that dropdown for the share with everyone, you have the option to actually go create another team site to enable that conversation. And if you want that functionality, there's a couple things you actually have to set up to get that. One is that the My Site web app and the Team Sites web app actually need to live within the same farm. In addition, we recommend that they're using the same app pool account so that that way we have the permission to actually spawn off that process and create those sites. Anytime that you're following content, you're using that following content feature for site feeds, or when you first upgrade and you want to start that process, you'll notice that the sites by default don't actually have that on. So you have to go and you have to turn on the following content feature to get site feeds for the specific team sites you upgraded. And in that case, there's one extra step. You've got to stop following and then refollow after the upgrade. It's one of those things that might I kind of threw in there as a note because it's kind of tough to track down why that didn't happen right off the bat post-upgrade. Another thing that I noticed is that, and we talked about in different demos this week, is that whenever I go to microblog and I mention someone, it sends them an email to let them know that they've been mentioned. If you don't configure outgoing email, they don't get sent an email. It seems like common sense, but I have already seen it a couple times this year, so wanted to point that out and make sure that that is a requirement. A couple other topology considerations. A single user profile application is going to provide you the best experience because we're talking to the same location for that identity information. It's all tied back to the same social hub or location. Now, we can talk to multiple user profile applications. It's just that there may be delays in notifications for that type of activity for those types of feeds. We also have, we still have in SharePoint 2013, the notion of the user profile replication engine to tie multiple UPAs together. Now, with that said, if we're going to have a community site built, again, it kind of goes into that same thing as site feeds that we talked about earlier, where we really want them to be provisioned in the same farm where the My Site host and personal sites are provisioned. That way, even though they can live in different web apps, we can still get that roll-up across the different communities that you're a member back up in terms of your feed to your My Site. If they are in different farms, you're not going to see the community notifications pop up into the news feed. I know that there's work to try and change that, so it's a temporary condition removed in the future. But for those of you that made a heavy investment in the 2010 news feeds, they are still there. There is an option, and I'm going to show you the dialog where you can actually click this single box that brings those news feeds in. They were deprecated, but they can be made available during upgrade if you so choose. However, they are not modified or migrated to the new format, so they're not instantly going to become the type of post or news feed that we have in 2013. So they're going to be the classic 2010 news feed type. One of the other things to consider in terms of when you're going into your planning phase is your Outlook Social connector, because the more Outlook Social connectors that we pop up across the enterprise, once they're configured to actually pull from the My Site, the more traffic, the more load they put in. So as you begin to roll out that social connector to Outlook, make sure that you're tracking the type of activity that actually occurs up on the SharePoint farm to make sure that you can scale for that performance. I don't have any numbers to show you on that today, but I would imagine as part of the capacity planning that's occurring, some of that will start to be available at a later date. The other big piece is that search is a huge portion of the My Site social experience in 2013. We use it for security trimming. We use it for surfacing a lot of the social information, for improving the ranking, and a whole series of things like that. So making sure that search is up and running and actually healthy first is a big part into making sure that you're going to have a successful deployment with search. Conversations are public, as I mentioned, so if I share with everyone, I've shared with everyone, I should expect it to show up in the search results. Now, the site feeds should be security trimmed because only the people that actually have the information to the feed that's in that specific farm because they're a member of that site are actually going to be able to get in. And because of that, the frequency of your crawls, especially incremental crawls, is going to play a role in how fresh those types of conversations are in terms of when they pop up because of the trimming cycle. The activities integration, as we start to get close to the point where we're actually going to start deploying this, this is one of the things that you want to consider. Because if you want to start bringing the different activities that people can actually report on, like if they do a status message, if they do a note board post, if they do tagging content, a job title change, workplace anniversary, if they're not following someone, do you want that to actually show up? Are those the types of activities that you want to populate into the feed? And if you do, when you're setting up your My Site deployment and actually configuring it, there's a single checkbox that says enable activities in the My Site news feed. So that's one of those that you want to If that's the plan, you absolutely want to make sure it's checked, or you're not going to have any of that information be available and get reported up. Now, once they do, they get written to that microfeed list that I talked about earlier, and then therefore they get consolidated. The activities provided by the SharePoint 2010 social features, those types of gatherers are still pulling that information from the SocialDB consolidated feeds table and are actually brought up. And so they enable a SharePoint 2010 activity migration. So we kind of keep that information there when we bring it over. But it can impact performance because it's constantly pulling that machine or pulling that database. In terms of permission management, this is probably one of the single most critical aspects of doing a MySite deployment on-premise. And that comes down to, are you actually going to let them create a personal site? Because as we mentioned before, the personal site is the storage mechanism for the social experience. If they don't have a MySite, they're not going to have the full social experience, right? If they have one, they're going to get the gamut. If they don't, they're going to get what we call a profile-only experience, which means that they can visit and edit their profile and enter any information about themselves that they want, including adding a photo. They can follow people. Through their people page, they can see and reply to the latest microblog posts. They can visit other people's profiles, and they can be mentioned, which they won't necessarily see in a feed because they won't have the storage for it, but they'll get an email notifying them that someone's been talking about them. So I guess in that particular case, it's better to be notified that someone's talking about you than to not. But they cannot create any root microblog posts. They cannot view microblog posts that they're following in the consolidated feed part. Remember that main landing page up on the MySite. They can't follow content. They can somewhat follow tags for interest. They can't aggregate their tasks or the My Task portion because, again, they don't have a personal site. They can't upload documents because, again, they're missing the storage mechanism. And they can't mention anyone because they don't have the infrastructure to actually pull that off. So in other words, a truly profile-only social experience if they don't have the MySite. So in the interest of trying to wake some of you up, because I realize this is relatively dry, nothing like being the guy that has to go through the guts of how this works. So how many of you actually have MySites deployed today? Wow. I guess if you're in a deploying social session, you probably have made that investment. But you'd be surprised that most of the times I actually ask that question and, you know, five or six hands actually pop up. It's usually a relatively small number, and it's usually very industry-centric, right? You don't typically see a lot of financial services customers pop up and go, yeah, we have MySites, we love it, we share everything. They're more like, what can we shut off? How can we restrict that? What can we turn down? So this is definitely one of those things that you're going to probably spend some time walking through trying to figure out what they're okay with. Are they going to be all right with storing the documents in the MySite, or is there some sort of policy or governance that prohibits them actually being able to store that data? Also, you know, coming up with a policy in terms of governance that establishes what they can and cannot put into a post. But again, trying to strike that balance between restrict point, completely locking it down, and actually allowing them to have a social conversation. The privacy settings, we still have. So if you're familiar with what those were like to set up under 2010, we had the option in terms of what you were actually going to display. And it had this really long list of different options, right? You had the ability to say, I only want to show it with my team, with my colleagues, with my manager, and one of my favorites is only me. I guess that's a placeholder for the things that you can't remember, like when your birthday is and you want to be notified. But either way, we had some funny things like that. And now in terms of the way we've restricted it, is we've made the setting more to only me or everyone. So you're either living social publicly within the enterprise, or you're not, and you're that introvert that's constantly interested in yourself. I mean, I guess that might be bordering on narcissist versus introvert if you only follow your own activities. But either way, I hope you know what you're doing. So with With that said, some of the options that you can actually control from central administration are whether or not someone can actually follow a document on a My Site, whether they can tag an item on a My Site, where their workplace anniversary is going to show. A whole series of these can be controlled. Now, the interesting thing with 2013 privacy policy, as opposed to 2010, is that users can always override the admin setting. And so this goes back, the reason, you know, if you've been dozing through the session earlier, the reason that we were talking about this is because when we're in that planning phase and we're trying to figure out how we're going to roll this out, we need to really think about, is everything going to be public from the beginning, or are we going to restrict it down? Because when we get to the point where it's already public, we've made that decision, the user can go in and override it, and they may go ahead and put the things out there that policy dictates they don't, and it becomes a cleanup issue as opposed to a restriction. As I mentioned, admins have the ability to make it public by default. However, once they go to do that, it actually blocks them and throws up that they don't have the ability to override it, that the users are in control at that point, if we go ahead and mark that. And also, if they are unchecked, there is basically no system activities in the microfeed. So this is another one of those little checkbox that I kind of wish in the product was much larger, that says when you're creating the My Site host, that says make My Sites public. This is one of those single checkbox, big decision moments, right? Am I going to go ahead and have the entire experience be public, be available, be out there, or am I going to restrict it down and decrease the type of options that they have available? Now, one of the things that you'll notice is we actually have this really cool privacy note, dialogue that basically says, do you want to get social? So you go to create their My Site for the first time, this dialogue pops up and it asks them a question, you know, are you ready to do this? You want to learn more? No thanks. They kind of get the choice there. And it's interesting, I haven't seen the extensibility points on this, but I've already had customers say, I would like a contract in there. Well, what do you mean? Well, I want to see something along the lines of, I'm okay if I show their picture. It's all right if I display their birth date. I want to display this, I want to display that, and I want them to click OK and accept it all and have it be legal. And I'm like, okay, talk to a lawyer. I'm not sure what you can get away with here, but in terms of the dialogue, this is the way it looks right now. But definitely a lot of interest from legal teams and HR folks around what all can we put when they click yes. So now that we've got a big chunk of that out there, and I've tried to tell you about all the different privacy type settings that you need to be concerned about and all the little nuances you're going to have to watch for, let's talk about some of the other things. I've also tried to call out some things that I haven't necessarily seen on TechNet as well. Hopefully that'll get updated. Is one of the prerequisites that you actually have to have in place before you begin the process of spinning up your My Site host and creating your web application and those types of things, is you want to make sure that the managed metadata service application is available. And the reason is, it's responsible for delivering those hashtags. So whenever someone says hashtag this, and they drop something in, or they have an interest that they want to follow, and they actually go in and put in my interest, that's actually pulling that information from the managed metadata service. So you want to make sure that you've got one of those deployed if you'd like to have that feature. The search service application does quite a bit. So it's another one of the ones that you want to make sure that you've got search deployed, actively running, and healthy before we kind of get to that point, because it's going to impact activities. It's also going to impact the way that we display what tags are trending, because that's all done via search and reported up through that web part. It also is responsible for doing the crawls and doing the suggested documents to follow. And it also is the one that's responsible for going out and finding all your existing tasks. So having search be healthy is going to make your My Site experience significantly better, right? Because you're going to actually get the full feature set. Now, of course, the other big thing is we're going to want to have a web application. And again, I know that there may be some of you that have created a My Site host that is sitting right there off of the root of your standard URL and are just fine with that. But in terms of trying to do some isolation and think about the namespace, we still recommend that you create a separate web application for the MySite deployment, right? We want to make sure that it's Dash and restricted, has its own databases, that sort of thing. In addition, and this should be a no-brainer because I spent, you know, about 10 minutes talking about the importance of the user profile application, you want to have one of those as well, because we're going to tie from it or tie into it and consume it. So let's actually go through some of those dialogues, since I don't have a way to connect to this. And let's say, what is the first step, right? So I went and I created that web application. I actually put it into its own web app, its own namespace. And I went in and I created a managed path for it, or I left it at the root. And right off of that root web application, I went and provisioned a MySite host. Because one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize is that MySites are actually a combination of site collections. We have the MySite host site collection that is essentially responsible for kind of pushing us over and creating our own personal site collection as well. So there's really multiples at play there. So the MySite host site template is responsible for provisioning right off that root. We also need to make sure that we define that managed path. And are we okay with the one that's suggested that's slash personal? Depending on which countries that you talk to, they may or may not be okay with the notion of having personal in a URL. So you've got options, pick something else. It doesn't have to be personal. Once we've gone and set up that, the next step is we want to make sure that the web application that we actually created has a service connection to the user profile application so that we're consuming from the right UPA. If you have multiple user profile applications, you certainly want to make sure that you're connected to the one that's for that specific farm. You also want to, and again, this goes back to MySite storage, think hard about doing something along the lines of self-service site creation for MySites. Now, how many folks today actually allow for self-service site creation for MySites? You let them create their own. Grows organically, so few. How many completely restrict it and it's basically some sort of process to call up and prove that you need a MySite? Interesting. I've seen it a lot higher, so that's great. I guess people are getting more open to the idea. In addition to choosing whether or not you're going to let them actually sign up and pick and point to where they're going to begin the process of getting their MySite, you also want to set up the permission policy so that they actually have rights to do some other things. I mentioned the notion of being able to create a group conversation by creating another team site that's restricted to a series of people. And to do that, I recommended that you be in the same web app or a different web app in the same farm. Well, to pull that off, you're also going to have to make sure that you set in the user policy permissions. You want to make sure that you go in and actually set the MySite, or I've called mine, MySite subsite, so that they actually have the permission to go create them. So if they want a site that's hanging off of their site, they can actually do it. The next thing we're going to do is go to the user profile application itself. We're going to click on the Setup MySites link, which is going to pop up and first expose us to the question of, do you have search provision? And if so, where is it? So that it can tie people search back into the MySite experience. It's also going to ask you where the MySite host is, which hopefully you remember the one that you just created previously, and point to that web app. It's also going to ask you for the wildcard inclusion that you created. In this particular case, it's personal. And then it is going to ask you what sort of permissions you have. For whatever reason, this read permission level, the one that's actually going to, you know, let you go in and be able to view the content, seems to be relatively controversial because it defaults to all users and everyone. So how many people have gone through the exercise, I guess retroactively, and said, we want to get rid of this, we don't want everyone to have perms? Is there anybody out there? At least one or two? Because once it's out there and it starts to grow beyond control, I guess there's probably the same folks that lock it down and say they don't want them to have their site created automatically. The next step that's going to pop up is it's going to ask you what sort of security trimming options you want. In this particular case, by default, it's going to say check all links for permission. And what that means is that as activities pop up, as you start to go through different types of activities through the MySite, we're going to take the links as they get posted to the site, we're going to throw those against the search engine and see if you have permission to them. And when someone comes to view those, and from that, they'll be security trimmed out. So that's another one of those decisions you got to make right there. Are we actually going to trim that information or not? In addition to that, As I mentioned before, there's that enable activities in my site news feeds. And then also, if you're upgrading that information from 2010 and you want to bring that in, you also have the enable SharePoint 2010 activity migration. So if you're going to be trying to bring that information over when you're building your My Site host prior to upgrade, you want to make sure that that's checked so that that functionality is actually available. In addition to that, we have some My Site cleanup options. And you'll notice that we have enables access delegation as an option now. And for a couple of the customers that I've talked to, this was a very big deal for them over in the European Union, because apparently in some of the countries, there's an option there where during the My Site cleanup process in SharePoint 2010, if someone had their account removed from AD and the My Site cleanup job picks up, sees that their account's been removed, it does a couple things. It reassigns that My Site to their manager, deletes their profile, and eventually deletes their My Site. And I guess the problem in some of those areas is that a personal site is truly personal. It doesn't belong to the company, the content belongs to the employee. And so when you end up in that particular case, by having that reassigned over to that manager, you're basically violating the privacy law of that specific individual. So by going in and having the option to uncheck that enable access delegation, we have the ability to really limit whether or not we do that and move more towards the deletion of the profile, deletion of the site. So it kind of gets us around that. And you can also, in 2010 as well, write your own custom My Site cleanup job, kind of hooks into it to make sure that you can actually go through a process if you want to make sure that you're doing disposition or things like that. And then there again is that big checkbox that I told you about, the make My Sites public, because this is really going to impact whether or not the activities such as new follow notifications, social tagging, rating content, birthdays, job title changes, workplace anniversary, a whole series of things are going to be available. By default, it's unchecked. If you check it, those types of things become available. The other phase after you've gone through this, if you want to save yourself, if you're deploying this, you've got it up, and for whatever reason you go and you can't seem to get a My Site to get created, or you can't get the feeds to actually pop up, you go in and check the status of the activity timer job and actually make sure that that one's scheduled to run on a basis that you want it to, so that it goes and processes the activity feeds and make sure that those actually show up. I don't know how many times that over the course of the beta I was sitting there trying to figure out why something wouldn't show, and then I'd realize I never set the job to actually start running. And then the last piece, and one of the last pieces that you've really got to look at this point, is if you have more than one user profile application, where do you want the My Sites to be? And when we start talking about regional farms and multinational companies that have multiple farms spread out across a large distributed geographic area, they need to be able to point, folks from Europe to the European farm, folks from the US to the US farm, and vice versa, so that we have the redirect in the right place to do it. We also want to make sure that we are targeting the audience for those specific users on that, so that we can control where they're actually going to spin up those sites, right? So one of the important things to actually plan for in those. And then the last one is determining how you want to throttle the maximum number of people, right? Or the maximum number of follows. So, by default, we limit the maximum number of people to the max itself, which is 1,000 that you can follow. We limit the number of followed documents to 500. We limit the number of followed sites to 500. And you can see that those are the maxes. But if it turns out that when you came up with your design in terms of your database and your hardware and things like that, that you really find that you're starting to get into a performance issue, you can actually go in and turn those down to accommodate for that. And so in summary, you want to make sure that you actually, totally go back to the very, very, very beginning. When you go to think about deploying about this, and it's hard for me not to talk about this because I think it's very, very important that you actually have a vision and a strategy for deploying social and figure out upfront what you want to use it for. In addition to that, make sure that you go through the planning steps and identify the privacy requirements that you have, understand what the implications of those are for you and for your business, and see which ones make sense. And then I'd also encourage you to take a look, because there are, I'm sure, as you've seen, a lot of social sessions. And I apologize to anybody. I know I've got a couple people in the audience that are social media PhDs, so I apologize for driving you through the bits and bytes to actually get it deployed. But the focus, again, was on-premise. So, and now, if you guys have any questions, I'd be happy to go through some of those. Yep, can you step over to the mic so I can actually hear you?
Great session, thank you. My name is Ramin Mobasari from eBay. You mentioned user profiles and the importance of the user profile and the role it plays in the world of social and how great they are. One thing I didn't see, what happened to the org browser?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What happened to the organizational browser? I didn't see it.
Okay, good question. So the organizational browser shows up when people are coming in to look at you. If they're coming in from the external side and they're looking at the About Me, there is an option there, but not if you go to look at yourself, as I recall. So it is still there. Since I didn't have the ability to actually demo this, which really shrunk the session time, then you would have seen, because I actually did have some people that reported to others, and you can see that it's on like the About Me portion. So it's still there. It's just not in both places anymore.
Is it okay to ask one more question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned the forefront identity manager that does a great job of importing into the user profiles and so on. Is it capable of importing Yammer user profiles?
At this point, I don't believe that it has any connectivity to pulling Yammer user profiles in.
Okay.
Right now, I believe it only supports pulling in profiles from SunOne, from IBM, from Novell, from an LDAP format in the using an LDAP file, and then also from Active Directory. And then now, luckily, we have the ability to pull from an external identity management system as well, like another instance of FIM that's standalone.
Okay, my last question. Polls play a big role in social. You can easily and quickly get people connected, get them excited, and by asking a simple question. What happens to polls? What is the strategy to, are there polls? I mean, are they out there?
So with regard to polls, this was kind of, especially after all the keynote announcements I wasn't expecting, it was really tough to kind of prepare for that message. But it's a good question in a sense when you start thinking about how does Yammer and SharePoint 2013 really play off each other, right? How do they augment each other? One of the strengths of Yammer is that it really does polling, right? I mean, you have the ability to go in and do that there, whereas not necessarily on the 2013 side. But then within SharePoint 2013, if you don't want to go completely, open, you have the ability to lock down team sites and restrict things using Active Directory groups. Whereas in Yammer, it's more of the open focus from the beginning, the full cultural chains. So I guess in terms of integration, especially in the O365 environment, you could use Yammer for polling, and you could use SharePoint 2013 social for some of the other pieces.
Thank you.
Sure.
I've seen installations where they put the My Sites not only on a different web app, but a different port. But in your demo or screenshots, I noticed that it was all on port 80. What's your opinion on putting it on port 80 versus a different port?
I apologize. I can't hear you for some reason.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There, Whoa. That's better.
Okay. See, I was trying to avoid that because that's really disagreeable. What's your opinion on putting My Sites not only on a different web app, but a different port? So I've seen installations where the My Site's on a different port completely, but your screenshot showed it on port 80 as well as the team sites. Do you have an opinion about that?
In terms of using different ports for the different web apps, I mean, really, I'm not aware of any restrictions that keep that from working. Mainly, I did it because I had set up a series of hosts for it, and it was just easier for my setup to make it, you know, make more sense when I went through the demo that I didn't get to do. but
there's no advantage or disadvantage?
Not that I can think of. Okay. It should be fine. I mean, it really comes down to whatever your policy is and what people can access it by. But I'm not aware of any problems as a result of it.
Thanks.
Sure.
Can I?
Sure.
I have a question about if you have a SharePoint 2013 form, can you actually consume user profile from a SharePoint 2010 and the reverse way?
So in terms of federating those services, like you said, can I consume a UPA that's in 2010 mm-hmm. from 2013? It works the other way around, as I recall. I'd have to go back and look at my notes, and I can after the session. But if I remember correctly, 2010 farm can consume from 2013, but I don't believe it goes the other way.
Okay, so if you have a combination of 2010 farms and 2013 farms, the recommendation is doing what? Duplication of user profile?
So really, in that particular case, and I'm kind of getting into some of the upgrade stuff, but that's fine. If you're really in kind of a, you know, like a regional farm model where you have, let's say the 2013, or you got several 2010 farms, and maybe one of them is providing the user profile application and mm-hmm. the others are consuming, from an upgrade strategy approach, you know, the best practice there is to really begin the process of creating that other 2013 farm, getting that services farm upgraded first, and having the 2010 farms start consuming from it. Okay. And then rolling the upgrade across the other consuming farms as you can. That way you'll get the, you know, be able to take advantage of some of the other services.
Are you guys going to publish like a migration roadmap or upgrade roadmap from UPA 2010 to UPA 2013?
If you go look in the upgrade guidance, we do have some of the services that can be federated and which directions they're federated, and I'm pretty sure that one's on the list. So you can go see which direction it'll actually federate with.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Hi, you talked briefly about hashtags, which is a new feature in 2013. So how are hashtags processed and stored differently compared to normal tags? What should we know about the underlying service?
So in terms of hashtags, they're stored in the, you know, by default in the enterprise keywords and the managed metadata service. So they're still stored over there in that particular term set. And then there's been, you know, if you've been through it, there's been several improvements on that side as well. But that's really where they're stored.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Any other questions?
Hi.
Hey.
In a geographically distributed multi-farm environment, is it still unsupported to share the user profile service across the WAN?
So basically, gosh, I knew I was going to get that question at some point. You know, the way I've set it up in the past that's worked really well in 2010 is really to try and, you know, if you have to have the multiple UPAs, basically, let's say I've got three. I've got one in the US, I have one in Japan, and I've got one in England. And each one of them really has the same directory identity information that they pull from, but we want to make sure we have it consistent across those environments. So what I've done in the past is really try and have each of those have their own profile sync up to Active Directory or whatever the identity source is. So they're pulling from exactly the same source into each of those environments. And then trying to optimize that pull in each of the locations. And then from there, really trying to augment that through user profile replication engine to make sure that those types of things are in sync between the farms. But really the key there is making sure that you kind of set up a full mesh for your replication topology, right? So you want to make sure that, like, the US is, you know, replicating to Europe and also to Asia, and that Asia is to the US and also to Europe. You see what I mean? It's basically in a complete circle there. And then with that, the big piece that you have to keep is they have to consume from the same managed metadata service, or you've got to create a lot of customization to make it not create duplicate terms and duplicate GUIDs. Mm-hmm.
Can you do a hub and spoke type of topology where you had a user profile service that you were replicating to and from? So maybe you have one in North America, one in Europe, one in Asia, and an ESF, and then have them all doing a two-way to the ESF. Is that a supported or a possible configuration?
So I've seen people try and do that. I can't say that, you know, I can stand up in here and say that they were successful. You know, the one that I mentioned is the one I know works because I've set it up at, you know, a handful of customers at this point and it works for them. But I have people ask me on a regular basis, could they hub and spoke through UPRE? And if you really look at what you have to do there to pull that off, it's, I don't know that I would recommend it. Let's see, any other questions? More than welcome to, since we finished early because of my demo. Okay, well, thank you for sticking around. I really appreciate it, and I'd be happy to take any more questions if you don't want to come to the mic and just